It's been a long week. It seems forever since the solar eclipse, right? We talked about that. We talked about true Southern identity this week. We read a few comics. So as we do every Friday, it's time to take a breath. We brought a group of smart people together. We're going to kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It is time for the break room.
First of all, I don't think it's just getting rid of the mountain. I think there has to be a telling of our history in the artifacts that are displayed out at Stone Mountain.
Another answer could have been dynamite.
That'll work too.
Afghanistan is a total and complete disaster. What are we doing?
Hey, what the? My retirement, Greece! No!
Joining us in the break room, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent. Eric Siegel is constitutional law professor at Georgia State University. Roxanne Donovan, professor of psychology at Kennesaw State University. And Greg Williams, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List and a mortgage banker. Welcome, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There's always a risk when you bring a psychology professor that she's just going to be like, you all are crazy.
She's writing down notes already on us.
She's doing it right now.
She's diagnosing us right now. All right. So let's talk about retirement. First of all, retirement isn't for everybody.
Hey, buddy. When'd you get in?
What are you doing here?
Told you I was retiring. I moved in next door.
I mean, you can't live down here. This is where people come to die.
Aretha Franklin has big retirement plans. She plans to move back to her hometown of Detroit, open a fabulous nightclub, and then sometimes step out of retirement just to sing here and there. So my question is, what is your dream retirement plan? Let's say money is no object. What would you do?
Travel around
the whole
the
time.
World. Yeah. Oh no. Well, no. I would travel around the world for a couple of years, and then I would retire to my lovely homes, where I would have one on the beach.
Homes. Yeah.
One in the mountains. Probably one in New York, and one here.
Well,
in Georgia.
We have a mortgage banker here.
Yeah, I was about to say, here's my card.
Greg, what would you do? Dream retirement?
Yeah. I would definitely move to the beach somewhere. As y'all may know, my wife is from Ecuador, and if money is the object, then it doesn't really matter where I live, but we would very likely go move to a tropical location, and I would have all the electronics in the world so I could keep up with the rest of the world, but I could also unplug if necessary.
Caribbean.
So you'd be with me
the whole time, yeah. The two of you could argue
the
forever
odd
and ever.
The odd couple.
not with Greg.
Oh, dear God. I was going to say the Caribbean, but now I'm going to change my answer. But I've given this way too much thought. I want to live in a tiny house on the beach in the Caribbean because I'm from the Caribbean. And I want to write. I'm with Kathy. I want to write about things that I love. And I don't want to be that connected to the world. I want to
Well, how are we going to read your stuff if you're not connected?
Well, I'll get on enough to blast it out, and then I'm turning it off.
Carve it into slates and then send them off to the publisher. Okay.
Get out of my head.
Let's get serious here. All right. The ACLU has brought lawsuits for decades in order to ensure the rights of pretty much everybody, and that includes the KKK and other hate groups, ensuring their right, protecting their rights to protest. But now the American Civil Liberties Union has changed its tune. It says it will no longer defend the rights of those to protest who insist on protesting while armed. Let's go to you first, Eric. Do you think this is a good idea?
I think it's a necessary idea. We all have the right to peacefully protest. None of us have the right to peacefully protest with guns, and especially if the town, village, or city knows that two groups are going to show up and they're going to scream at each other. They are completely within their First Amendment rights to say, you can show up, you can protest, but all weapons have to be left at home. And let me just say, there is no serious Second Amendment argument to the contrary.
Greg?
Well, counterpoint,
now
right?
Now that you mentioned it.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, the ACLU is actually exhibiting and demonstrating their freedom of speech, their freedom to act. They're engaging in their First Amendment right to not protect this. And obviously, I think with the rhetoric so heated on both sides, with the neo-Nazis rising up and also the Antifa and the alt-left, it's just a powder keg right now. And I don't think any of these demonstrations anybody should go unarmed to these demonstrations. We're just too close to a brinksmanship and too much of a pushing point right now that it's a real
risk.
Yeah,
and it's often law enforcement that asks protesters not to be armed. Roxanne, what do you think?
I think armed protesters reduce the free speech of those who don't have guns. So I don't want the Second Amendment right to trump the First Amendment right.
So I think this is a tough call.
What?
Because I don't believe in people being armed at protests. But on the other hand, I believe in supporting free speech, obviously. So, but there are time, place, and manner restrictions that free speech is never, it's never total.
It's not unlimited.
Absolutely.
People think free speech
especially
is unlimited.
Especially if it's not a gun-related protest, right? If you're protesting something that's not related to the Second Amendment, then can't you talk without having to be armed?
I also said that I was on a show yesterday with David Cole, who's the legal director of the ACLU, was talking about how in 1934, when the ACLU first began to defend the Nazis, 1934, right to speak, their official first idea was you can speak, but you got to leave your guns at home. And that just makes sense.
Although, if we went back to all those old Western movies, nobody would be able to talk.
Tombstone would be a silent movie.
It would. There would be no talking. Sorry, Kathy, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Kathy.
No.
Are you done?
It also the free speech doesn't guarantee the right to incite violence, quote unquote, is the word. And so if you've got guns, that can be said that is
an
part
incitement.
Of that. Right.
Okay. So let's move on to something even less appetizing. Cool. We all like cool, right? That's what the air conditioner is for. Cold? No.
I can't feel my fingers anymore. They're numb.
Books and websites, and probably somebody you know, though, is touting the benefits of cold showers. There are health benefits, and then there are lower water heater costs. So, are you guys cold shower aficionados?
Never.
If I don't pay the gas bill, then yes, I am. But other than that, no.
Cold showers, just the thought of it, I don't understand. Warm showers saved my sanity when I was pregnant. I took 3 of them a day. It was the only time I felt good. It helps me go to sleep. And yes, I know there's environmental reasons. I know there are bill reasons. I know it's good for your body. But no, never getting on that train.
Hot, hot, hot.
And more hot.
So there is a practice or a myth known as not doing. Do I have time for this?
Yes.
And it may basically allows you to do things that you wouldn't normally do in order to realize
that you don't
have these limitations that you thought you did, that you can pass boundaries and do new ways, find new ways to do things. So this would be not doing because you're doing something you normally don't do, but I'm not doing it.
Well, in Georgia, we describe the weather as this is a 2-shower day or a 3-shower day in the summer.
Because of the humidity.
Exactly. So I can defend the practice of a lukewarm shower, or maybe it's like 70 degrees coming out, not the 108 piping hot that Mr. Siegel seems to like. So, but certainly not a frigid
That's
cold.
That's Eric to you.
If you've ever stepped into a cold shower, there's an audible gasp when you get in there when it first hits you, and that's just not a pleasant thing.
Wait, no. So none of you have gone polar bearing? Do you know what polar bearing is,
of
where
course.
You jump into a frozen
into,
lake?
Yes.
The answer to that is no.
No.
I have
not
never gone and never will go.
I jumped into the Lake Austin. There's like 48 degree.
Yeah.
I jumped into that.
Kathy, I mean, I've done it, but not...
Done
I mean,
what? I know. It was really exciting, except it took your breath away. I wouldn't do it again. I was like,
I did jump into Lake Minnewaska in upstate New York, and I believe it was 61 degrees
That's
or something.
That's frigid.
And then I jumped out.
So, and that could, like, kill you.
Well,
you could have a heart attack. But
I guess. But all right, let's put this out. Because I've been polar bearing many times.
Oh my gosh,
really?
You have?
You have?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually quite enjoy it. So
Where?
In the mountains of California, up in near Big Bear and all that.
You're much tougher than you seem.
And then up in Detroit, you can go out and jump into the Great Lakes while there's
in Detroit?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And how long do you
stay in, by water?
How long
I
do
know,
you
but
check a map
it's clean
there,
enough to
Siegel.
Jump in.
Oh.
Sorry.
Hey, how long do you stay in? That's what I want to know.
That's where the
there
toughness comes
there
in, right? It depends on how long. You'll have everybody competing for how long they can stay in the
cold
water.
Hypothermia,
but sometimes
anyone?
They'll crack through the ice so that you can clear a space.
That can't be good for your voice, can it?
What
inspired
you
to go the first time?
Just like, I gotta try this.
Oh my
really,
God.
I am getting no love for this idea.
How
here,
old
so
were you when you did it?
Let me put this out to the listeners there. Cold showers, yay or nay? Polar bearing, yay or nay? Find us on social
nay,
media.
Nay.
It is Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, texting while walking, Confederate monuments, and Trader Joe's tomfoolery. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room because it is Friday. My guests are Roxanne Donovan of Kennesaw State University, Eric Siegel, a constitutional law professor at Georgia State, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, and Greg Williams of the conservative radio show Greg's List. And we did get a response from Kathleen Mullins-Mason to the conversation about cold showers. She says, cold showers and polar bearing? No, and heck no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hell no.
However, our own Sam Burnham says, besides the James Bond shower, a cold shower is refreshing after mowing a field on a Georgia summer day.
Sam knows what's going on.
The James Bond shower?
Yeah. That's like a quick shower, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe with a woman. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sam,
Move
you're going to need to explain in an NC-13 way. Anyhow, let's talk about texting. In some cities, texting while walking is a civil offense.
A New Jersey assemblywoman introduced a bill making violators subject to a $50 fine or 15 days in jail. This as cameras capture mishaps of distracted walking. This man nearly runs into a bear in a California neighborhood.
Honolulu, Hawaii, Stanford, Connecticut, just two of the cities that say texting while walking is dangerous, and officers can now fine you if they catch you doing it. So how would you feel if Georgia took up this policy? Do you think texting while walking is a problem here?
It is definitely a problem, but, I mean, it's very subjective. What if you're using the walking app on your phone to figure out which building you need to go to? So I think...
I just don't see enough Georgians actually walking.
That's true.
If you walk around downtown, my wife had to work at the Westin last week on a Friday morning for a business meet and greet. And, I drove her into town, and I mean, it was a bevy of activity along the streets down there in front of the Westin and the Hard Rock Cafe and all that. And everybody's on their phones and they're not really paying attention to the streetlights. And I mean, I do see a risk, but I don't think the police need to be micromanaging what's going on with people's texting while walking.
This would be the third time this morning Greg and I have agreed, which means matter and antimatter are about to collide.
Right.
And I don't know what's
exactly
going to happen. Of course, we need a law about this. It's ridiculous.
Well, the question is always, how is this going to be enforced? Are there going to be policemen standing behind?
Selectively.
Right. And then, you know, they're going to track you down and say, you know.
No, they're going to use texting while walking cameras.
actually, in a somewhat serious note, what would happen is, like most other neutral laws, the police would apply it in a racially discriminatory manner. That's what would happen with this eventually.
So let's hope that doesn't happen. This texting while walking is dangerous.
It is
dangerous for other pedestrians. It's dangerous for drivers. People are walking into crosswalks without looking. I'm for anything that deters this behavior. And I can't stand walking behind people who are texting because they're so slow. And I'm like, I've got places to go. You need to keep moving. Right. Keep it moving, people.
All right.
It's more of an etiquette thing, though, versus whether we need an actual law for it.
Well, I did watch a woman who was texting while walking into Starbucks trip over a stroller and knock it over.
Let's just publicly shame the people and not put a law.
I didn't name her.
But did your intro say that someone in California walked into a bear?
Nearly, yeah.
A bear?
Yes.
How did they have the internet connectivity?
Was the bear texting?
You need to go and watch the video. It is worth watching.
I want to live in a place where I can run into a bear, I think.
No. You very much do not.
Okay.
No. That's not fun. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk again about Confederate monuments. Georgia has its share of them, including the biggest one there is.
What's your problem with Stone Mountain?
It is a monument, literally, to white supremacy. Now, there seems to be this notion of the antebellum South as a place of mint juleps and fancy afternoons on the lawn. But it was a harsh life for millions of people held in chains.
Well, they conveniently left that out of the laser show.
All right, we not only have the largest, but we almost have the most. We are in second place, just behind Virginia, for a number of Confederate markers. Why?
So my guess is we might have had a more organized propaganda campaign led by the white women's groups, like the Ladies Memorial Association and the United Daughters of the Confederacy, because they work tirelessly on behalf of maintaining their view of, including textbooks, by the way, whitewashing textbooks, maintaining and glorifying their view of the Civil War as just a battle between the states.
Well, and Sherman burned Atlanta, so there's going to be a lot of places where there are markers and where there are places that are identified with monuments to Confederate soldiers.
But I think Sherman burning Atlanta is more important symbolically. So I think there is something about even the most educated Southerners where there is something that's been lost. And it's really a difficult, complex problem. Burning Atlanta, I think, is the most visible, an obvious example of how something...
I just want to add one tidbit, which is that the fire that eventually burnt Atlanta was actually started by the Confederate soldiers. That's something that many people don't know. Right. But, Greg, go ahead.
Well, you know, you got to look at it. Georgia was one of the original 13 colonies. Atlanta and Georgia now are the eighth biggest population. So I think it has a lot to do with we just have a lot of people that have lived here. And, you know, obviously in the 60s, there was a push to put up some of these monuments. I believe Roy Barnes made a big push in 2002 to remove the Confederate flag from our state flag.
Thank God.
So we've and Martin Luther King is from here. So we just have a lot of history in Georgia, and I think that factors a lot. We also had the Battle of Chickamauga. We had a lot of
Kennesaw
Mountain.
Yeah, which is
Stone Mountain, the largest piece of granite in the world. So we have a lot of obelisks here that are part of history, really. And this obsession with tearing everything down is getting
it's
to a point
obsession.
Of desperation.
It's not an obsession.
So I just want to explain, Roy Barnes, for those who don't remember, he was the governor of the state of Georgia. He was an attorney and politician. I should also mention, like, as an interesting tidbit, that sometimes we forget Georgia was actually kind of reluctant to get in to secede. It took a while of convincing to get the state of Georgia to join the Confederacy and secede. But anyhow, let's get the comments from our listeners on this. Why does Georgia have so many Confederate monuments? What do you think? 404-500-9457, or find us on Twitter. You know how to find us. Okay. Membership in neo-Nazi groups and radical right groups, it's on the rise.
We have been seeing, really, ever since Barack Obama first won election in late 2008, a growth in groups on the radical right. In the last year, though, Donald Trump has added fuel to that fire in a very big way.
So now the number of Americans who say that neo-Nazi views are acceptable has doubled to 9%. So 22 million Americans or so say Nazi views are not inherently bad. Why has this changed? Why are neo-Nazi views... We're not saying this is the majority, obviously. This is 9%. But still...
To the extent we're talking about race and neo-Nazis, as opposed to anti-Semitism, the number one dominant economic, political, social issue in American history was at the very beginning race, it was in the middle race, it is today race. And anything that, so this president is sparking that issue in a way that no president has done since, I don't know, a long time ago. And it is a very serious thing. And we've never really come to grips with the fact that race is our biggest issue, and always has been.
I think the left and the liberals have cried wolf for so many years about racism that when it's finally abject racism, that it's kind of people have been desensitized.
You
to
don't
it,
think so. Racism has been an issue in the United States?
Of course it has, but it's been we are a post-racial society.
No,
now.
We're not.
More white people voted for Barack Obama than black people, just because of the demographics and the way numbers work. So the fact that the left continues to try to exploit racism and to use race baiting rhetoric, it's now manifesting in people, you know, in active revolt against their tactics.
I'll buy you the dinner of your choice if you read the book The New Jim Crow and give me a book report on it. And
when a person of color, I have to argue that we're not in a post-racial world because of my own experience and because of the experience of people that look like me. That aside, the fact that we are, or that included, the fact that almost 1 in 10 people are supporting neo-Nazi views is sad but not surprising. I mean, there's a lot of social capital now related to these views from the leaders of our nation. And the more that they have social capital, the more individuals will feel okay about coming out. That doesn't mean these views weren't held before, but there were social ways of making it not okay to actually say them. Now it's becoming more okay because they're getting cover from the leaders of our nation.
I agree with Roxanne. It's the way President Trump has responded over the past week or two makes it only clearer to some of these groups that they have support, even if he says he denies that he supports some of these groups.
And it is my journalistic duty to point out that statistically we're not post-racial. I mean, the data is the data. You can point out all the disparities in levels of society.
My biggest problem is with giving the fringe groups such a platform. Whenever, you know, I live near Clarkston and Tucker. Yeah, the neo-Nazis or some of the fringe groups on the left, giving them the platform, that fuels the fire. You know, when I go to the gym or wherever I'm at, it's a very multicultural area, and nobody is talking about neo-Nazis where we are. We're talking about the economy or just regular life that I think that 90% of people are in the mainstream of it. So
no, 90% of the people are not going to the gym in your multicultural area.
Before this devolves, let me remind everyone, we are in the break room where civil conversation rules. Eric Siegel is a professor at Georgia State. Roxanne Donovan teaches at Kennesaw State. Greg Williams hosts the radio show Greg's List. And Kathy Lohr is a former NPR correspondent. Okay, let's talk about something less controversial like war. I think it's safe to say the president has altered his position on Afghanistan.
Let's get with it. Get out of Afghanistan. We've wasted billions and billions of dollars, and more importantly, thousands and thousands of lives.
Okay, so during the campaign, he said he would pull all U.S. troops out. Now he says, after consultation with generals and experts, he wants to add more. A sign that the president's mind can be changed, right? Maturity from behind the desk?
I mean, I think a lot of people will campaign, and then once you take the office, I mean, almost every president in recent history has campaigned on something, and then when they actually have all the data and they're actually the one making the decision, evolve their minds? But with Afghanistan, it seems like the only way to win is to not fight over there. And for me, seeing a 4,000 troop surge, I don't see what that's going to really do to increase the odds of victory. And we don't know what the victory is. It's very ill-defined. It's very undefined. And we just have no idea what it's supposed to look like. Trump said we don't want a nation build, but what are we doing by just sending 4,000 people over there if not being a police force?
And if we're trying to reduce extremism, I think 16 years of occupation does the opposite. It radicalizes people. We're occupying a nation state, and people are dying.
I think Mandy Patinkin, of all people, had this correct. I'm not sure he was talking about Afghanistan, but he was talking about this kind of problem. And he said, with all the money we spend on the military, we could give them food, clothing, shelter, and bribe them. And we could, even if you could look at it cynically, make them economically dependent on us, if you look at it cynically. But we could really throw money at them, which would de-radicalize many of the people in those countries. I'm all in favor of that. Get the troops out, send the food and education in.
So I guess it would be cheaper in the end.
Yeah. And I guess he found out that it's not so easy to get out of a war as he thought prior to becoming president.
As we have seen, Afghanistan, our longest-running war. Since we're talking about food, Trader Joe's, they have a reputation for carrying very unique food items.
Steve, I just did a big Trader Joe's run. Pour yourself some unsweetened cherry juice. Maybe have it with some sunflower paste on a flax crisp.
Okay, so the truth is out. To some people's surprise, Trader Joe's offerings are sometimes made by companies like La Boulangerie and Snyder's and then just labeled TJ's. Do you feel duped?
Yep.
I you see do. It's a bait and switch. When I buy something from Trader Joe's, I have this expectation that it's going to be made better. I know, good marketing on their part. But to find out that I could just get it at Publix, I don't know. I was a little crestfallen.
But Trader Joe's is supposedly cheaper than Publix or a Kroger, right?
I have to haul my cookies to Trader Joe's when Publix is right down the street.
So it's like so Trader Joe's entire appeal is being private label, but I mean, all they're doing is rebranding it in their name. So I first of all, it's not a surprise. Second, I mean, I like to go to local places like the farmer's market. I went to a place called the Tucker Meat Market last Friday. Amazing selections of meat. And the owner of it actually knew.
Are we allowed to plug things here? I didn't know that.
No. And it's a different kind of meat market than I was used to in college. I can assure you that. So.
Whoa. Oh, God. Okay, we're going to stay with the NC-13 label.
I don't think it's surprising, actually, because when you go in there, you're wondering, how can all these items be such a low cost if they're all these individually
small? I just think, wow, Trader Joe's has good buyers. They know how to pick stuff.
I guess so, and they have limited selections. But you know what? I don't go to Trader Joe's that often, so it doesn't really affect me.
I do. I love Trader Joe's. But we will take your opinions on this as well. You know how to reach us. Kind of lightning round here. One last topic for us to talk about is Georgia Tech. They are now guaranteeing admission to all valedictorians and salutatorians in the state. Their idea is they can expand access for Georgia's best students. Good idea. Do you see any downsides here?
Great idea. UGA should follow suit.
Great idea, no downsides. Equity among schools in the state that have vastly different economic means.
Great idea.
Great idea.
Wow.
It's unanimous.
I might
that ever happened?
I actually might go further and suggest a top 5% plan doing the same thing or something.
Texas
like that.
Does much of
yeah,
that.
Texas yeah. is top yeah. 10, top 7.5%.
Is it 7.5?
Yeah, something like odd. That. It's not exactly.
And that just makes the flagship schools so much better. Georgia, with the hope when it came back in the 90s, that turned Georgia and Georgia Tech into Georgia Tech was already very highly regarded. Georgia's moved up the ranks, and now schools like Kennesaw and Georgia Southern have achieved big gains in education.
Not to mention Georgia
outcomes.
State, just saying. Since we're plugging things.
Where you're the professor of law.
And they're all.
And where my son is a student. Go Georgia
right.
State.
Okay. But I think, you know, for years they've tried to figure out how you keep your best kids. And
yeah, but the question is not how you get them into the school, right? It's how you keep them after they graduate.
Right,
that's a problem Georgia hasn't quite solved yet.
Right.
But we are out of time in the break room today, and I want to say thank you to all of our guests. Greg Williams is host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Roxanne Donovan teaches psychology at Kennesaw State University. Eric Siegel teaches law at Georgia State. And Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent. Thanks to all of you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show and the week. But what do you out there think should be done about our Confederate monument? Should Stone Mountain be left alone and everything else either moved or removed? Let us know. Reach us on Facebook or on Twitter, or just leave us a message. It's 404-500-9457. For today and the week, it's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.